Welcome to Midday. I'm Sheila Cass. Thanks so much for tuning in. 12 million gallons, that's how much sewage Baltimore's Department of Public Works estimates was intentionally released last week after heavy rains overwhelmed Baltimore's dilapidated sewer system. The sewage was released from overflow valves and ultimately made its way into the Inner Harbor. The Department of Public Works, the City Department of Public Works, reported shortly after the storm that only 164,000 gallons of wastewater had been released. Their estimate was amended several times in later press releases. The news of this intentional sewage release comes after the Department of Public Works missed the January 1st deadline imposed by a consent decree with the U.S. Department of Environmental Protection, U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, and the Maryland State Department of the Environment to stop all overflows and spills. That agreement dates back to 2002. The city is right now renegotiating a new deadline with federal and state regulators. Also, at the end of last year, the Environmental Integrity Project and the Able Foundation published a report titled Stopping the Flood Beneath Baltimore Streets. According to that report, after more than a decade, the city is only about halfway done on the work required by the consent decree and has repeatedly broken the terms of the agreement. That report also found that over the past 5 years, more than 330 million gallons of sewage had been dumped into the Jones Falls. All this despite increasing water and sewer bills, raising more than $2 billion to fund construction and repairs. A representative from the Department of Public Works was booked to be part of this conversation. They canceled in part because of the tragic fatal shooting this morning at a public works maintenance facility in Penn North. And we certainly send our concern to the people involved in that. We do have with us in the studio Mark Reuter, who's been covering this issue for the Baltimore Brew. Welcome back, Mark.
Thank you.
And Hallie Vandergag, Executive Director of Blue Water Baltimore. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So what actually causes these overflows, Mark? I mean, why do we have these repeated releases of diluted sewage into the Jones Falls?
Well, the main reason is that the city's 100-year-old sewage system just isn't capable of handling storm surges. And that is the key to the consent decree of 2002. In violation of the Clean Water Act that's now over 40 years old, the city systematically, intentionally, when there were storm surges, just had overflow pipes that then they released the sewage water into either Jones Falls or some of the other local waterways, all getting down into the Inner Harbor eventually. So the short answer is that the system is overwhelmed. There's also capacity problems because of the poor state of some of the main sewer lines going into Back River, which don't have the capacity. And so that increases the problem.
Hallie, how would you answer that question?
First of all, we're really glad that the city is actually reporting these overflows at the proper levels, as they are legally obligated to do. These particular relief valves, it is an intentional discharge, but the reason it's built that way is because there isn't enough capacity within the pipes. In fact, any given day these days, there's about a 10-mile backup through the Jones Falls of raw sewage waiting to get its way to Back River. The city is...
I'm trying to picture this. There's a 10-mile backup in pipes?
In the pipes, into the sewage pipes across the city, trying to get its way into the Back River treatment plant. And the city's currently planning a major overhaul of that wastewater treatment plant that will allow it to take that sewage. Unfortunately, it's a very expensive problem, but the city is moving forward with it. One of the things we'd really like to see is to make sure that that corrective action is documented in the new and modified consent decree that is currently being negotiated, because these overflows have been discharging millions and millions of gallons. The fact that it's being reported on now is great, but this has been happening consistently.
Where do the overflows happen?
It's actually right at the Baltimore Streetcar Museum. If you are making your way down the Jones Falls Trail and during a rain event, unfortunately, the manhole covers are popped and there's often wastewater debris, things like toilet paper and condoms that are spread all across the street, including human waste. And when it rains, those pipes overflow. And then that's sort of what is left on the street. And one thing the city is also obligated to do is get out there promptly, cordon that off, and clean it up. And we'd like to see continued improvement in that public health issue.
Mark, how often do these overflows happen? I mean, is this essentially any time there's a rain, and how much of a rain?
It has to be a fairly large, and like last Wednesday's storm was a big storm, over 2 inches at a very narrow time frame. So it has to be a big storm. However, these big storms, whether it's rain or snow, is becoming more frequent with global warming. So this is going to be a long-term trend that we're getting more violent storms that are adding to this whole problem, that the rain comes down, snow comes down heavily. I wanted to just add one thing to the Jones Falls. That is one of the main, that's the main visual cue to see where sewage is flowing into the Jones Falls. Actually, the biggest source of the Jones Falls is underneath Preston Street and the JFX in Mount Vernon. And that's the area where Jones Falls goes into the Fallsway, and it is a subterranean river. And it's down there that last week, 9 of the 12 million gallons of sewage flowed in. So we're looking at something that's 20, 30 feet under the ground. So we can't see any of it, but
so
it's there.
We don't see it at that point. But do we see evidence of, I mean, you mentioned, I think, Hallie, you mentioned some of what people see elsewhere. Where is it that people tend to see evidence that there's been an overflow?
Sure. It's not just into the streams. Unfortunately, it is across city streets. We see chronic issues on Chase Street and the Linwood area, where we actually noticeably see people walking through, getting out of their cars in rain events without the awareness that this is actually sewage-contaminated water. Most people think it's just rainwater, but it is coming up through the manholes, and it is unfortunately a kind of toxic soup of stormwater and sewage, and really impacting where people are walking and biking.
That is Hallie Vandergag of Blue Water Baltimore here on Midday on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. Also with us is Mark Reuter of Baltimore Brew. We're talking about overflows of Baltimore's decrepit sewage system. Have you seen or smelled evidence of sewage release? Do you hike or bike along the Gwynns Falls, Jones Falls, or Herring Run Park? Do you think the city is doing enough to alert the public about sewage releases? Join this conversation. Call us at 410-662-8780 or send us an email at midday@wypr.org. Hallie, I want to pick up on the last point you made. When we call it sewage, many of us think of pretty concentrated stuff coming, you know, coming out of our homes. This is very dilute, right? I mean, it's coming after a rainstorm, and it's very dilute. Does that change how we should think of the danger it poses?
Unfortunately not. I mean, dilution is no longer the solution to pollution. And we also see, we do the water quality monitoring around the city, and that we see chronically high levels of fecal bacteria, the actual stuff we really don't want to touch, both in wet weather and dry weather. Unfortunately, the Jones Falls in the Inner Harbor is chronically contaminated with fecal bacteria, whether it's raining or not, in part because of what we call dry weather overflows, where there's a chronic kind of leaking of pipes through even when it's not raining, as kind of adding to this level. So what we're reporting here are through wet weather overflows, but every day there is seepage of raw sewage through the storm drain system and elsewhere. And the other part to remember about raw sewage is not only is it really unglamorous, we're talking about a human health issue here with viruses, pathogens, things like staph infections, hepatitis A, that can actually really impact people who want to take a kayak out on the Inner Harbor and simply don't know how contaminated it is. And one thing that we would like to see to protect the public health is, while the overflow is happening in the Jones Falls and that's now being reported, there's no one downstream that actually understands that overflow happened. And we have water quality experts at Johns Hopkins that are saying things like, we must put signs in the Inner Harbor to warn people. Anne Arundel County issues a blanket report 48 hours after any kind of rainstorm. And we often forget that people are fishing in the Middle Branch and they're pulling crab pots. And this is not just really about the health and safety of our waterways. It's about the health and safety of our citizens.
We have some people who want to join this conversation. Josh is calling us from Baltimore. Josh, welcome to Midday.
Hi. Thanks, Sheila. I just wanted to say that I work very close to the Jones Store, on the Jones Falls Trail at Baltimore Bicycle Works, and all summer long we see kids coming from the neighborhood from Greenmount West and sort of descending down next to the Amtrak repair lot into, you know, basically the Jones Falls where it goes underground. And, you know, so kids are definitely playing in the water. And, you know, we try and tell everyone that we see not to do it, but, you know, we're only open so much. And I'm confident that it's just, a thing that kids are doing regularly in the neighborhood for recreation. So just wanted to add that, you know, you can see it and you try and tell people as much as you can, but it's a, you know, disturbing thing.
Josh, I appreciate the call. Hallie Vandergag, you just said that Anne Arundel County issues a blanket warning after, I think you said, any big rainstorm.
Mm-hmm.
Could it be that Baltimore officials think people are used to this and know after a rainstorm there's a problem here, there's a problem there, you've got to be careful?
Right. They do have some signage that we've been happy to report that they have finally put in after us, you know, really advocating on the need for signage, but it simply states that it could be contaminated water. And I think at this point we should go with the assumption that it is contaminated water, and let's err on the side of safety.
We got an email from Tom who asks, how do stormwater and sanitary sewage get commingled? Is there a leak between systems?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. The systems leak. They often are adjacent or one above the other. They're both extremely old, up to 100 years, and there's systematic leaking. So today, for example, there might be sewage leaking into the stormwater system and coming out of stormwater drains into the various waterways in Canton, in the Inner Harbor. And then during wet weather, the rainwater that should be in the storm drains leaks out of the storm drains into the sewer. So it's a back and forth situation that's happening constantly.
And I think that's one reason why we want to see in this new and updated consent decree that the consent decree adequately addresses wet and dry weather. We know in other cities that have been able to really get a handle on this and reopen their waterways, it's dry and wet weather overflows. Currently, this consent decree is really focused on those wet weather overflows, which are important. But there are things that we're hoping this new modified decree will really kind of, on a very technical level, will help the city prioritize both of those type of overflows.
We need to take a quick break here. When we come back, more from Mark Reuter of the Baltimore Brew and Hallie Vandergag of Blue Water Baltimore about Baltimore's sewer system and what should be done to address public concerns about sewage releases. Welcome back to Midday. I'm Sheila Cast. Baltimore's decrepit sewer system has been in disrepair for decades. Last week, after heavy rainfall, 12 million gallons of sewage was intentionally released into the Jones Falls, the main tributary to the Inner Harbor. I'm joined today by Mark Reuter, senior editor and reporter for the Baltimore Brew, and Hallie Vandergag, executive director of the local environmental group Blue Water Baltimore. If you live in Baltimore, have you experienced a sewage backup in your home? Have you seen wastewater debris while hiking or biking along Baltimore's waterways? Be part of this conversation. Send us an email at midday@wypr.org or call us 410-662-8780, 410-662-8780. Marty from Middletown has called us. Marty, welcome to Midday.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My original question was somewhat answered already by an emailer, and that was regarding commingling of stormwater and sanitary waste.
Okay.
I'm curious, and supposedly there's leakage or something, but I believe the comment was that the consent decree originally went in 2004, something like that.
2002, I believe. And your question?
2002. Well, my question is, good grief, what's been going on for the last 14 years? I live in Frederick County, and I used to commute the 270 corridor, and they would always say, well, we have to study the problem of widening I-270. So I'm wondering how many bazillions of dollars have been spent on studying the problem, and how much of financial incentive money when we had the financial crash and there were block grants given out to states for shovel-ready projects. Why hasn't someone started digging already?
Well, actually, quite a lot of work has been done, and our two guests are very knowledgeable, so I'm glad you teed up this question. Let me just put something, so Marty, thank you. Thank you for the question. I want to put something else into the conversation, though, before I let Mark Reuter and Holly Vandergag answer it, and that is part of a conversation that Tom Pelton of the Environmental Integrity Project, who produces a weekly report here on WIPR called Environment in Focus. He spoke with Dana Cooper, who is the Chief of Legal Affairs for the Department of Public Works, about what work had been done. She described some of the mapping that needed to be done to understand the problem.
One of the reasons how we got into this mess was that our system had not been proactively maintained over the long term. It hadn't been mapped, and we did not have a good sense of the condition of the pipes. And so you really don't know what you need to do in each pipe until you know what's going on in there. And so that mapping, that condition assessment, that inspection, that's really what took all of the time.
Mark Reuter or Hallie, either one of you, how would you answer Marty's question? What's been going on since the
A lot of studies, a lot of studies. Consultants go before the Board of Estimates a half dozen times a month, and tens of millions of dollars are given out to the consultants to do the mapping, to do this and that study. They also have consultants doing a lot of the routine inspection work. So in addition to that, there have been sewer lines that have been rebuilt, and the city is systematically relining sewer lines. That's the technique they have to end these cracks and leaks in the line, is to reline them. Much of the money that has been spent has gone into major improvements to the city's two big treatment plants at Backwater and Patapsco. They've actually made quite a number of improvements there. There's been a lot of money spent there. A lot of that, however, is not directly city money. The state in particular pays for a lot of the sewage treatment. So that's the two areas, pipe relining, sewer treatment. But the whole program hasn't come together. And so that's why you see that the problem, and that is poor water quality, still exists, and in certain cases is getting worse.
Hallie Vandergag, do I have the right impression that the work needed to meet the requirements of the consent decree is about half done?
It's about halfway done. They've spent about $700 million. These are city estimates on the work that's being done, although significant work remains. In fact, a lot of the really heavy, large-scale projects that construction is needed on are really still what's been ahead, because, and I would agree with Dana, that the mapping and assessments is very important to be done. You don't know what you know until you really kind of get under there and do that. However, with that work behind us and to the 14-year, you know, time spent so far, it's really time now to get moving. And with all the studies and the assessments and things being identified, one of the challenges we want to see in the modified consent decree is let's set an ambitious timetable. Let's not project and push this out into 2032. Let's have a meaningful timeline on the next one. If 14 years wasn't enough, what is it really going to take? And then let's have the regulator step up to the plate and actually enforce that we're going to hit this new deadline. Because that's a reason why Blue Water Baltimore actually took legal action in 2013 to really try and have a seat at the table. We have real concerns with the regulators, who are not here in Baltimore. They're in Philadelphia, and MDEs around the corner, is that they're not really seeing what we're seeing locally. And we think there's a real benefit to having the local boots on the ground water quality knowledge be a part of the conversation, particularly so we can be monitoring progress, not just on projects in the ground. We would really like to see this consent decree actually dictate that water quality standards must be met. Right now, the only indicator of progress is, did they get the project in the ground? That's not good enough. We need to see water quality improvements mandated in the new decree.
You've mentioned several times that the consent decree is being renegotiated. Does Blue Water Baltimore have a seat at the table?
We currently do not. What we have been doing is really advocating on behalf of our citizens and all of the concerns that we have and raising them continuously with the city, with EPA and MDE, working with EIP to actually get this report done. So and championing
the Environmental Integrity Project.
Yes. And really championing this reporting is a great place to start. This is legally obligated, but we really want the public to understand these are big, complicated infrastructure projects. We need the work to be moving faster, and we need the work to be more accountable in terms of financial transparency and project transparency. But we're optimistic that this new consent decree really may give us the opportunity collectively to be moving forward faster.
That is Hallie Vandergag, of the executive director of the local environmental group Blue Water Baltimore, here on Midday on WIPR. Also with me in the studio is Mark Reuter, senior editor and reporter for the Baltimore Brew. If you live in Baltimore, have you experienced a sewage backup in your home? Be part of this conversation. Tell us what this whole issue looks like where you live. Join the conversation by calling us at 410-662-8780 or send an email to midday@wypr.org. David called us. He couldn't stay on the line, but he asked, Blue Water Baltimore is doing a project in Library Square by Linwood Street. Is this related to sewage overflows?
Sure. Well, thanks for that. We're doing a big stormwater management project at Library Square. Indirectly, it does help. One of the things that we're trying to do and the city needs to do through green infrastructure is actually slow down the volume of stormwater that is happening through our streets and our streams. When that fast volume stormwater hits sewage pipes underground, it, by its very nature, is destructive in terms of the wastewater pipe. So by managing and holding stormwater more effectively, and that's why we're doing projects like this, we actually are, in fact, helping protect wastewater pipes. And the beauty of the stormwater projects is we're also revitalizing communities through trees, rain gardens, and other types of efforts. So they're technically separate systems, but we know by managing stormwater, we're protecting both wastewater and drinking water pipes from scouring and other problems that happen in our stream beds.
I think it was you, Mark. Maybe it was Hallie. Either one of you I know can answer. You mentioned the backup at the sewage treatment plant. Is that, when we talk about this consent decree and what elements need to be in place, is expanding that sewage treatment facility part of it, or is that on a separate track?
It currently is not part of the consent decree, but we think the project is vitally important. We are hopeful that it will be in the new decree and it will have a manageable deadline to allow the city to meet it. I don't think that problem was really known until the consent decree was well underway, and we think the city is doing a great job in highlighting it and moving it forward because, frankly, we're not going to close those overflows on the Jones Falls. We're not going to be able to do certain things until that project is done. We just want to make sure that it's moving and that it has a targeted deadline for completion.
But whatever amount of money we're talking about for the sewage treatment plant, is that in competition then with what it takes to stop the sewage overflows? I mean, I take your point that until that sewage treatment plant has more capacity, there will be backups. But are they competing for the same funds, the sewage treatment upgrade and the overflow projects?
They both have to happen at the same time. The resources simply have to be found. And the city has been raising rates. There are opportunities for federal grants and other revolving loan funds that the city has been able to take advantage of. The Back River is really important, but we need to make sure that leaks in the Gwynns Falls, which go to the Patapsco, are also being dealt with. But I think regardless of how we do it, we have to move forward with both of those types of projects.
We got an email from Peter who asks, how much does the lining process reduce the carrying capacity of the pipes? If they can't handle the flow already, this doesn't sound like a long-term solution.
It's a CIPP, cure-in-place pipe process, and it's being used all across the country to effectively reline pipes. The city's relined about 39% of the pipes. It is the industry standard at this point. I'm not an engineer, so I don't know exactly how it's reducing the capacity, but that is one of the best strategies moving forward, and this particular material is pretty hardy. It will actually hold up to a significant amount of pressure and water.
Okay, we need to take another short break here. When we come back, we're going to have more from Hallie Vandergag of Blue Water Baltimore and Mark Reuter of the Baltimore Brew about sewage releases. Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Sheila Cast. I'm speaking with Mark Reuter, senior editor and reporter for the Baltimore Brew, and Hallie Vandergag, executive director of the local environmental group Blue Water Baltimore. We're talking about Baltimore sewer system and the recent release of 12 million gallons of sewage into the Inner Harbor. If you've got a comment or a question, join the conversation. Call us at 410-662-8780, 410-662-8780, or send us an email at midday@wypr.org. Jonas is calling us from Baltimore. Jonas, welcome to Midday.
Thank you. I guess my question is for people who ride their bicycles or drive in that area, because I've noticed a very bad stench. What is the risk to their health?
Thanks for the question, Jonas. Hallie?
I think it's safe to say that we really encourage people to take their sneakers and shoes off before they enter their homes when they've been through what is clearly either wastewater debris or sewage water. We are often cautioning people to avoid contact with the water should you have any kind of cuts or sores or any of those type of issues. Obviously, people get sick for a lot of different reasons, but I think it is safe to take precautions in terms of your sneakers, your bikes, and when you actually come in contact with the water, a good hand washing is always really recommended.
Thanks for the call. Mark Reuter, in terms of reporting, what does the law require the Department of Public Works to report about overflows?
The state law on that's the Maryland Department of the Environment, requires Maryland jurisdictions to report any overflows of sewage water over 10,000 gallons. And so that's the requirement. That is supposed to be reported in a timely manner, both to the MDE and as a public release. Disclosure.
So they're supposed to, putting out a press release is part of their legal requirement.
Yes, it is.
And last week, as you detailed in the Brew, there were quite a few press releases from DPW
right.
About there's this much release and no, it's this much, no, it's, and then it shot up to multi-million gallon levels.
That's true.
Is that the pattern? Does that always happen? And do you have any idea why?
No, the pattern has been that DPW has not reported as part of this disclosure the overflows at what it calls the intentional overflows. It's only reported accidental overflows. So for these two key overflow units, there's two left in the city, both on Jones Falls, on Falls, Lower Falls Road, and under the ground on East Preston Street. They haven't been reporting that information, and the Environmental Integrity Project was able to determine that through a public information request where they compared information that they got through that and what was being reported on the database of MDE. And they were the ones who first cited this in their report. And last week, after the big storm, DPW reported three small leaks in the system, mostly in East Baltimore, and perhaps among other people, the Brew requested specifically what was the overflow at these two intentional sewer lines, and eventually, 24 hours later, we got a report, oh, well, they're 27 times more than the original report, and then that was more than quadrupled over time. So the report went from 160,000 gallons to 12.4 million in a matter of 30 hours.
And I think the important thing about reporting is this is a great move forward. It's legally mandated, but we want to make sure that the public actually understands this. Boston, for instance, one of the cities that actually has been able to retake their river and have it be fishable and swimmable on certain days, uses a really unique flagging system along the Charles River, where depending on what water quality is, it's very obvious to the public through red, green, and orange flags what water quality is doing that day. There are opportunities to be creative. We don't want to frighten the public, but we think that the public has a right to know what is happening so they can make an informed decision about whether or not they should put their children in a paddle boat or not.
So you're envisioning some kind of billboard somewhere where there would be somebody could check on any given
right.
day whether there's been an overflow recently or...
Right. We actually have a real-time website called the Harbor Alert. If people want to log on and check that out in terms of an actual fairly close to real-time website. But we recognize not everybody is going to be evaluating a website or if you're here from out of town. And we think that other cities have been able to notify the public more adequately than we're doing. So we want to see this reporting, but we really want to figure out how does this translate to
into warning
people about fishing, crabbing, and boating.
Franz is calling us from Baltimore. He's had some experience with this. Franz, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi.
This is Franz. How are you? Yes, I just wanted to briefly talk about my experience with the storm. I have part of my family live next door to me, and we got the level was over 2 feet of raw sewage coming into the basement for the duration of the storm. The sump pump went into effect, kind of just took everything out and wouldn't lower the level because there was so much of it, and pumped it all across the neighbors' backyards. It was pretty bad. So my extended family's been staying with us. They still are with us until the cleanup is done. But the part that's really been upsetting is that it had happened previously a few years ago on that property before I bought it. And when I bought the property, I let the insurance agents know that it happened, gave them the paperwork showing it was cleaned up and everything. And when I went to file a claim, they told me, well, you're not covered for that. We should have told you that the underwriters will never cover for that sewage issue if it had happened in the property before. So that was quite shocking to us, and we've been, so far, we're $9,000 out of pocket.
Oh, my goodness. Franz, I'm really sorry about the whole experience and especially the financial aspect of it. Do either of you know whether that is a typical insurance?
Yeah, unfortunately, Franz's issue is pretty common. There's over 413 claims that have been filed in Baltimore City about this particular issue. And we're seeing that, a very small percentage of those are actually settled in terms of what the city's actual responsibility is. We know that there are a lot of homeowners that are affected that simply do not have the means or even the ability to navigate the city's system. And, to go back to the consent decree, one thing that we are hoping is going to be in this particular document is a way to address the private property concerns of citizens who are being highly impacted. And, again, this is toxic stuff. This is not something that people without the right level of protection should be handling. And we know in other cities they are sending in people with hazmat suits to clean up problems more immediately. And certainly we shouldn't be burdening homeowners with undue cost and undue responsibility to clean this up. Again, we are not sure if remediation for this will be in the new consent decree, but it is something that Blue Water and a number of us are really hoping for because these type of stories are far too common.
Mark Roeder, you cover City Hall pretty intensively. Is this something you hear people talking about at City Hall? Some kind of a fund or some way of...
I've heard nothing about it. This is something that is not discussed in City Hall. Maybe some of the candidates now are discussing in the mayoral election, but for the last 5 years, the only thing that is discussed at the Board of Estimates, and it's not discussed, it's an edict comes through of a water and sewage rate increase. The city council has the right to hold hearings. They hold hearings on all sorts of matters. They've done some hearings that peripherally are on this subject. So there really has been very little response by the elected city officials on this problem. Pretty much it's all been in the hands of DPW, and DPW has made very halting progress in giving in terms of public disclosure. We really get very little from them.
Luke is calling us from Baltimore. Luke, welcome to the show.
Thank you. My question would be, is the funding the biggest hurdle to completing the lining and the replacement of the pipes right now?
I guess, just kind of follow up with that. I could stop you now, Luke. No, it's not. Thanks to you, if you live in the Baltimore metropolitan area, and to other listeners of the show, the huge increases, it's hard to, but more than doubling, tripling of the city water sewage rates over the last half dozen or so years has given the city quite a pile of money. They have much more money in the bank, in effect, than they have used for construction. So money is not an objective because of these steep water and sewer hikes.
Thank you for the call, Luke. We had an emailer who picked up on the point that Mark made about maybe candidates are looking at this. Is this an issue in the mayoral campaign? Hallie?
Yes, I'm excited to report that the environmental community held a mayoral forum, and many of the candidates showed up. And I think there's real concern among those running for mayor about what's been going on with this issue. And 7 of the 10 candidates that were there identified sewage contamination as one of their top two environmental issues. And the other concern that was raised by these candidates and by the citizen advocates were there was just this point that Mark is making. There's been very little transparency and accountability related to where money is being spent. And the taxpayers, after all, are funding this. I know that we hear from lots of citizens that they're willing to pay the money. They understand infrastructure is a huge problem, not just here, but across the country. But they simply want to see more progress, and they simply want to have a better sense of where the money's actually going for them to feel good about what those water rates are actually funding.
Do either of you have a sense of when we're going to know more about the consent decree, what that track is?
I think we are 2 months and a day past the deadline. We know that the city and the regulators have been negotiating in earnest since late 2012, so we certainly would hope to see it any day. The city has indicated that they basically thought they were going to see it in December. And again, I think this is a point that we need to continue to make. This is the regulator's job. This is not the same situation as Flint by any account, but this is a place where the Environmental Protection Agency and the MDE need to put forth a document, and they need to put it forth now. We need to see what's going on, because until that new decree is issued, work is continuing, but is it the best work that needs to happen? And I think we've all waited long enough.
We have to leave it there. I want to thank you both, Hallie Vandergag, Executive Director of Blue Water Baltimore, and Mark Reuter, Senior Editor and Reporter of the Baltimore View. Thank you a lot.
Thank you.
Also want to thank Eddie's of Roland Park for providing lunch for our guests today. You can learn more at their website, eddiesofrolandpark.com. And I want to thank you for listening. Tomorrow, a proposal to merge the University of Maryland College Park and University of Maryland Baltimore is before the General Assembly once again. Is merging the two schools a good idea? We'll discuss tomorrow at noon. You can join us.